Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to My Favourite Takeaway, the show for people who love food but can't always be bothered to cook it. This is a show where me, Tom Crane, and my friend Simran Shah go into the homes of celebrities and share their favourite takeaway with them exactly as they'd have it. How are you, Sim?
Well, I'm good, but just so everyone knows, Tom asked me to not say hi so early on in the podcast because it distracted him. So I've just held back. I've held back until the long intro before you say my name, and then I'll say, hello, yes, I'm here, thank you. Thank you very much for letting me on.
This makes it sound like it's some really unhealthy relationship. All I meant was, normally it's a joke, you chip in and say hi midway through the introduction. And I listened back and it seemed, there was a lot of words, a lot of noise going on. So I thought it'd be a smoother listen.
I've taken the hint, Crane, and I'll only speak when spoken to. It's fine. Honestly, it's fine.
Look, Simran, if you're holding the conch, you get to speak. But when you're not holding the conch, it's not your turn.
Okay.
Sim, how are you feeling, more importantly? You were ill last week. Are you feeling any better?
I wasn't well last week, Crane, but I am feeling better, thanks for asking.
Ah, good.
I'm much improved. And down to people were sending in some suggestions of what they eat when they're ill. And I looked at a couple of these. I've got to admit.
Yep. That's good of you. You looked at a couple of the emails received.
I've got to admit, didn't take any on board, but I looked at them.
It's so lovely on a show where we routinely ask people to send in lots of stuff. You go, I looked at a couple of them. I didn't bother looking at most of them, but I looked at a couple. How gallant of you. How kind. So what two emails did you take the time so kindly to read?
You know what? The truth is, people sent in some very sensible suggestions.
So, oh, did they? Okay.
Yeah, it was more, Joe said tomato soup and cream crackers. Jonathan.
It's a sensible suggestion.
It's a sensible suggestion. Jonathan said bread, butter and soup. Again, a very sensible suggestion.
It's the sort of thing a doctor would say.
Imogen, on the other hand, went a little rogue and said, when I was little, if I was poorly, the only thing I would eat is a big bottle of peas.
Oh, my goodness me.
I think that's a bit much. Unseasoned, I assume. But just a bowl of green peas is not, that's not for me.
But then you say that, it's like a gateway pea towards wasabi peas, isn't it? You start with a bowl of peas and then you work and when your mouth is ready, you enjoy wasabi peas. So maybe there is some kind of, it does make sense in a way.
I do like the idea of a gateway food. That's quite fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you do have gateway foods. Like, I do think with curries, like, people will try kormas, whatever, as a gateway into like a spicy.
Yeah, curry. That's where I was very much so. When I started, korma was my gateway curry, and now I'm sort of like a patia or something like that. I kind of a dansak. I'm a fan of, that's my sort of thing. But then, after reading through those things, we realised that there was a general theme of our emails returning, wasn't there? And that was, we were getting more and more emails about weird food combos. Now, we asked this 2 weeks ago now, and we're still getting lots and lots of emails about this. Simran took the time to read one of them, I'm sure. I read the rest. I took the time to take it. But we've got some very, very weird food combos. I'm going to take you through them. The first one that really caught my eye was from someone called Rhea, who sent us a picture of what was like, it looked like a stew, and then she had some white Kingsmill bread, and she just sort of shoved the the stew inside the bread, like a stew sandwich. And then she's written, okay. I love putting anything in bread. And her quote is, any meal, get inside the bread. So her point is that any food will be improved if you put it inside bread. Now, fans of the podcast may remember that a little while ago, we did a thing called things that will be improved by putting a poppadom in it. It took the nation by storm. So
it was a great item.
Mind,
I love it.
It was a great one. Well, it was a great item. Simran, I've got a new item and a new jingle, which is meals that will be improved by putting them inside bread. There you are. So, Simran.
Okay, so let's hear them, Craig. So these are meals that can be improved by putting a bit of bread in there.
Well, I've got three things. I want you to tell me if you think they would be improved by putting bread around them. So first of all, Sunday roast. Is that being improved by putting it inside bread?
Jesus Christ, Sunday roast. Yeah. It's a lot of gravy, though. That's going to turn that bread soggy.
However, Simran, I would suggest, I think the post-Christmas sandwich is better than the actual Christmas dinner. I really do. I think the Boxing Day, cranberry sauce, turkey, whatever you happen to put in your sandwich is superior than the actual Christmas dinner itself.
Are you toasting that sandwich out of interest?
I'm not. I'm going soft. Straight white soft bread. That's how I'm playing it. And I really, really enjoy that. I think it's better than the actual meal itself. Okay, my second suggestion, sweet and sour chicken. Is that better by putting it inside bread? Thoughts?
I'm on board with that. I think it could get a little congealed in the mouth. That bread.
Yes.
And that sticky sauce. I think the textures are going to clash there, buddy.
But it's a bit like it's like a cut price bao bun. That's how I'm sort of seeing it as.
Yes,
it's kind of
exactly.
It's a cheap way of doing that. Okay, third one, Simran. Is this meal improved by putting bread around it? Toast.
Lovely stuff, Crane. Really like that. I love that. That's very nice.
You get a piece of toast and then you get some soft bread and you put it around. Oh. My mind, you get the softness of the bread touching your lips, lovingly caressing them, and then crunch, the fun of the toast.
That is...
Thoughts?
I'm fully on board with this. It's a bit like, I don't know, like you're putting chips inside a bag of crisps. And so I like it. You're doing a carb overload. I'm into this.
That's not a bad idea, actually, chips in a bag of crisps. I quite like the idea. If you took the time and you had Monster Munch, you could slide an individual chip in the hole of each Monster Munch and then sort of just put them all back in the packet and have them one by one. You're getting lovely sort of pickled overload with the chip.
If it feels like the two of us have the time to do this, I think we should try it out.
Do you want to put aside a weekend to put chips inside Monster Munch? I'm up for that if you want. Like we could book a cottage somewhere in Cornwall.
Happy to put aside another weekend and book that cottage again to do it. I'm happy to.
Because the last time we just spent 2 days eating peas from a bowl, didn't we? And that was a great weekend. So in conclusion, which is best, you reckon? Sunday roast, sweet and sour chicken, or toast? Which are you going for?
I'm going for toast. It's got to be toast.
I'm actually going to try that for breakfast tomorrow. Now, that Ria's email, of course, is not the only email received on this subject. As I say, we got countless emails on this. Take us to another one, Sim. What else have we been sent in terms of weird food combos?
So Natasha has a weird food combo. And this is a simple and clean one, though I think... I've never tried it before and I'm very keen to try it. Okay, here we go. You ready for it, Crane? Doritos in Nutella.
Interesting.
What do you think? Salty Doritos, sweet Nutella.
I'm going for that. I am, because you know...
That crispiness and in the smoothness of the spread.
I think that works. It does work.
Well, I don't think you can dip a Dorito in Nutella is what I would say initially. The Dorito will hit a very hard surface.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have to make that Nutella warm and then you have to dip it in. And then I think it's going to be real nice.
So thank you, Natasha. I'm going to give that a go. As always, thank you so much for sending in your correspondence. You can email us on hello@myfavoritetakeawaypodcast.com or use one of these many, many other forms of communication.
You can follow us on Insta on My Favorite Takeaway Podcast, on Twitter, on Fav Takeaway Pod, or email us hello@myfavoritetakeawaypodcast.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Right, next up, we have Nigel Ng, the creator of the internet sensation Uncle Roger and stand-up comic who's about to tour around the world. Crane, we had a great time with Nigel. We went to his house and we ate some Malaysian food, and he was talking to us all about how to cook the perfect egg fried rice and the perfect Malaysian food, because, of course, that's basically how he made his name, commenting on other chefs' videos.
Yeah.
It was such a great chat, and Nigel is one of the most interesting people we've had, especially talking about his career and how he suddenly shot internet fame.
It's amazing, isn't it? Basically how he's rocketed basically in lockdown. It's an incredible story, really.
It was really great, and he's such a lovely warm bloke, so we really hope that you enjoy it.
Okay, so we are very excited to be in Nigel Ng's new house. This is a first for us. Normally we're in like people's kitchens or their front rooms, but where are we sat at this point? What is this space?
This room is what I use it as a studio. And I wanted it to be a studio, but now I do all my work from here as well because the other rooms aren't ready yet.
Okay, yeah, amazing.
Yeah. And so you create Uncle Roger in this studio. So yeah, like surrounding us is microphones, big lights, like it's all padded out.
You both look beautiful under this light. It's amazing lighting in this room. It's huge sort of.
Thank you.
I wish you had a video component. I
know. It's a pity that the listeners can realize quite how well lit we are.
Yeah. Listeners, if you want to see what it looks like, just go to my channel. Every video is basically this background.
Yeah, it's glowing. Yeah. And it's all sort of soundproofed as well. So this is where you do everything. I feel bad. Are we okay to eat in here? Are we going to sneak out your room? So, what are we eating today? Then what's in front of us? Where's this from? And what's the deal?
It's one of my favorite restaurants in London. The restaurant's called Sambal Shiok. It's a Malaysian restaurant. They specialize in laksa. Laksa is a Malaysian-based noodle dish it can be either curry laksa, so served in a watery curry type sauce, but like a Malaysian-style curry, not less like Indian or South Asian. Or they can have an Assam laksa, just served in a very sour, fishy broth. But they, I think they only do the curry laksa, the first type. So that's what the mains are.
Okay.
When I went to the shop today, they said you're a customer. You've been there many times.
So many times.
And I said, oh yeah, we've got this. And then they said, oh, he usually orders some eggs with there, and there's no eggs in this. So they put some extra eggs in.
Yeah. I got a WhatsApp from Simran saying we got free eggs, which is such a weird thing. It's like, okay, great.
I was excited. I was so excited. I was like, they've heard about the podcast, they've given us free eggs.
It's such a weird particular sort of perk. Wherever we go now, we get free eggs. That's the thing. That's there's great. A show, it's so well known.
Just drop my name and you get free eggs.
In prep, you can get out of the egg with the spinach in the morning, just mention Nigel, you get free eggs, you're away. So should we crack into the food then? So
let's do it.
We like to eat it in the order you like to eat it, but we've also got a few sides here.
Yeah, let's start with the sides first, man.
So what have we got in front of us here? Let's go through these dishes.
Okay, so these are the eggs.
Let's see them.
A pot of eggs.
These are crackers.
These are fenugreek, is that right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So what is it? It's kind of like
it's a cracker.
Now we have these in India.
It's a bit like a poppadom, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So is it a poppadom? What is this then? Is it basically the same?
They're all in the same family of thin cracker-based stuff.
It's quite aromatic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's more aromatic than poppadoms.
But probably really nice. You're supposed to dip it in chutneys, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So is there a culture of this in Malaysia then, sort of for dipping stuff? Is this a thing, a pre-meal? Prawn cracker, that's not really a thing. That's Thai and Chinese.
We do that in Malaysia too.
You do as well? Yeah. Okay.
Thailand's next door, so we steal a lot of their ideas, you know?
Would you eat these crackers sort of dry? Usually, or would you dip them in stuff?
Never really had fenugreek crackers in Malaysia, but in Malaysia, if you have regular prawn crackers, you just have them dry.
There was a raging debate on our Instagram actually about whether Thai or Chinese prawn crackers were better. People were really getting quite angry about it. People choose a side. What's your view on a prawn cracker? What makes a good one for you?
It has to be, the crunch has to be there.
Mm. Yeah.
And there's a little thing, prawn crackers, the surface, the way they catch, they latch onto your tongue, there's this little crackly texture when they just touch your tongue, right? So that's how that's what I ate growing up, so that's what I like.
It's
I like
so
that,
true. Like, you know, it doesn't want to sort of let go of your tongue.
Yeah, it just grabs onto it like it Velcro. Does,
yeah, that is true. That is so growing up, well, where did you grow up?
Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, KL. Kuala Lumpur.
And so when you grew up, were takeaways part of your diet? What was the takeaway cuisine? What were the takeaway offerings like when you were at?
Every hawker stall, really, they have a takeaway option. You can call it to take, you can just ask them to take away, they wrap it up for you.
Yeah. Mm.
So over here in the British takeaway culture is specific restaurants have, they're not restaurants, but they are special takeaways.
Yeah.
Right, but over there, if they serve food, you can either eat there or take away. All the restaurants do that. So takeaways there can be literally anything. Chinese food. In Malaysia is a melting pot of many different races, right? So I can get like takeaway Chinese Malaysian stuff, takeaway Indian Malaysian stuff, or Malay Malaysian stuff.
Yeah. And did you get many takeaways growing up? Were you a family that got takeaways, or was that like a real treat, or was it part of your week, or what was
it? We just ate at the hawker stall, really.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
And what is the hawker stall? Sorry, what is that?
It can range from anything from a motorcycle by the side of the street. He just sets a few tables up.
Oh, really?
And chairs.
Oh,
okay.
It can range from that to maybe in a little alley, they set up like an awning, and they have the tables and chairs outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or they can have like proper, not really restaurants, but hawker centers. Yeah. So it's a building, enclosed building, but with many different hawker stalls in the building. Or you can have restaurants.
And they're all doing one like particular dish, or are they running like restaurants with a menu? Or what's the sort of deal there?
Oh, I think hawker stalls will specialize in like specific dish.
Okay.
Some variations of that one dish.
Yeah. So on a weekly basis, your family would be going, that's how you'd be eating, basically.
Weekly basis. Yeah, I think we would probably, go to a hawker center every weekend. My mom, when I'm in school, then we had a school cafeteria.
Okay, yeah.
Right? But then on the weekends, we just go like for brunch. We didn't call it brunch back then. Brunch didn't exist back then, right? It was just, you were too lazy for breakfast, so you go at 11:30. It's not something to be celebrated.
That's true.
90s, when you have breakfast at 11, people laugh at you because you're like, you're a fucking lazy prick, you woke up so late. And now it's like you have
it's
a mimosa,
so
you know?
if we miss breakfast when I was growing up, you didn't eat till lunch. That's what it was. Too lazy. You're like, well, that's all, the cereal's all gone now. It's all packed away. You're not going to eat.
That's true. In Malaysia too, like we go to dim sum sometimes in Malaysia.
Okay.
The good parts of the dim sum, the good dishes will be gone by 10:30.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, really?
You'll see Asian uncles camping out there at 7 on a Sunday.
Oh, wow.
To get the good shit.
So what is breakfast in Malaysia then? What would you be eating?
You could eat this for breakfast.
Really?
Yeah.
You'd, laksa.
A prawn laksa you could have for breakfast. Yeah, that makes sense. Yep. I mean, in India, you'd have curry or something for breakfast.
Yeah.
It's not...
We just have regular meal, maybe a little bit smaller portion size. Yeah.
But you might add like an egg to it. Or
yeah, you might add an egg to it. That's a Joe Poy joke.
Suddenly,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. He said, in Asia, your breakfast is just last night's dinner with an egg on it. So true.
When did you come to the UK?
2015.
2015, so that's pretty recent, actually.
Yeah.
So how old were you? You were?
I was born in 91, so 2015, I was 24.
24,
yeah. Okay.
Before that, I was in the US for 5 years. So
studying.
I grew up in Malaysia, first 20 years of my life. Grew up there, born and raised there.
Yeah.
And my taste of the Western world was US first.
So did this sort of childhood of eating out a lot, and that being that, did you know how to cook when you went to the US and when you went to sort of live on your own? Or had you just got into a rhythm of constantly having takeout and that was...
I had to learn how to cook when I went to the US.
Did you?
Yeah, but that's less a factor of, we ate out a lot, but also my mom cooked most meals when I was at
home.
So,
I
was pretty useless too. but you had to learn. First year at university there, I was in a dorm. So as the first year, they cover all the food. So the dorm cooks for you, and you have a meal pass. So you can eat all the meals you like. But then your second year, they only give you 20 meals a week. Like 15 meals a week. So you got to figure out the other meals. So that's when I started having to learn to cook.
So you had to work out when you were going to have your 15 meals in the... So what was the spread of that? Working out when you're likely to be going out and when you'd be...
I don't know. Everybody's different, right?
That feels quite complicated.
For me, breakfast. I like breakfast.
Yeah.
So
I'll
go get the omelette.
Okay.
Lunch, usually I'm in between classes, I'm rushing around, so I just get a sandwich. Instead of going to the cafeteria, I just get a sandwich.
Yeah.
So I usually have like breakfast and dinner.
And when you started to properly cook, were you cooking Malaysian food?
Impossible.
What, ingredients not there? Or
ingredients not there. You have to take like a train down to Chinatown to get stuff.
Okay.
And it probably stinks up the place. Your roommates will complain.
Oh, yeah,
it takes ages to, it's like, that's why I'm very confused when I came here and then Jamie Oliver has those book, Jamie Oliver 5 ingredients. Yeah. A Malaysian thing. This has like 12 things in it. These crackers will have 12 spices in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I see the Jamie Oliver 5 book. I'm like, how good can the food be?
Yeah, you know, yeah, because, yeah.
And also, all of his cookbooks focus on how easy it is to make food. It's never about how delicious it is. Right? You ever notice this? Most British chefs' cookbooks are like, make noodles in 10, breakfast in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, 5 simple ingredients, you know?
Like, when I choose a restaurant, I just want to see chefs that don't look stressed. That's all it is. I don't care what it tastes like. I just want to see really chilled out people behind the...
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. I mean, I was just going to say what you were saying about cooking Asian food at university, because my flatmate in the first year, I had a Chinese flatmate, and he used to do hot pot. Is that what it's called? I remember that obviously felt like quite a choice for him, because no one else was doing it. Obviously, he'd have all the equipment, all the stuff he'd have to get, and he'd have friends coming around. But it took him a little while to get to a point where he felt comfortable to do that, if that makes any sense. Because the sort of the theatre and the space you'd be taking up, and it's culturally, it maybe felt, oh, this is unusual, whatever, people aren't used to this.
For me, yes. It would take a while. I need to know my roommates well enough first to know that I won't piss them off.
Yeah.
But maybe also he didn't buy the hot pot. It took him a few months before he bought the hot pot.
Yes.
Manju, should we... Yeah. So in front of us are these three...
What order should we have the stuff that's in front of us?
You have the fried chicken too.
Let's go with the fried chicken.
As well. These are like special ramen bowls.
Oh, wow.
Perfect for noodles.
Very nice.
See, the problem with takeaway is you get soggy after a while.
I love.
And that's why I prefer just sitting there and eating.
Let's give this a go. So this is the fried chicken.
Do you eat it in the restaurant?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. That is absolutely delicious. So there's a culture for fried chicken then in Malaysia. Is this sort of a... I know in Korea, obviously, that's become very famous here. But is that the case?
We have our version.
So how's yours differ?
We call it ayam goreng berempah. So I think we use different spices. We have a version of fried chicken that's red, because we use a certain type of red spices. I don't know it off the top of my head. It's good. Just the dish is different. It can be. Every culture has fried chicken, right?
Yeah. So this is the main dish we've got. So do you want to explain what this is? So prawn laksa, is it your laksa? You were saying. So
laksa.
This is a laksa. There's a particular type of broth that we're having here. Is that right?
So yeah, it's curried. Did you get the medium or did you get the spicy?
Hot.
The hot.
Oh, cool. Is that right?
They have a little bit of a kick.
Okay. So. Is it really got a punch?
Yes. Yeah. So start with tasting the broth.
Start with tasting the broth.
With a spoon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, wow. God,
there is a heat to that.
Yeah,
that's delicious. So
what temp?
If it's too hot, feel free to pour in that. I think that's coconut milk, right? You try it.
Yeah,
yeah. If it's too hot, pour that in.
This is delicious. So there's a sort of fish flavor running through this, isn't there? Yeah.
What spice level do you usually order it?
Hot. I wish you would go one step above hot.
You would go one step above hot.
If they could do it,
if
I would.
If they could do it.
But I like a challenge, and I like spice. I like sweating after a meal.
Yeah.
It's quite... And, you know, spice brings out the adrenaline in you.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure does.
And how else do you feel it?
Do you...
Adrenaline these days. Gambling.
Stealing cars. Yeah. That's how I get it.
Yeah.
I'll just eat some chilies, you know, and not break the law.
So will you sometimes ask if they have a heat setting which is higher than what they have on the menu? You'll look for the secret menu. Is that a thing that happens in Malaysian places? You can go off-grid, can you?
Yeah. This place won't have a secret menu, but some places will.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what sort of... Are there dishes that people wouldn't normally order on there that you could ask for? Is it more of a heat thing?
It can be both, really.
Yeah.
This place offers neither, unfortunately. Because it's a small place, they want to only serve
like
7 things.
It was quite multicultural in there.
Yeah.
It was a good place. It was really busy.
It's Asians and trendy white people.
It is. Yeah. It is Asians and trendy white people.
Yeah, that's how you know a restaurant's
exactly
right. Good.
There's
a
pub just opposite as well called the Horatio. Do you know the Horatio pub?
I think I know
what
pub you're talking about.
Brilliant, because they let you take in any takeaway food from any of the other places around there.
Oh, I didn't know.
So you could go there. Get drunk, pop across the road, get some Malaysian, Chinese, burger, whatever you want, and bring it back into the pub and have it there. I mean, what an absolute winner that is. It's great. When I realised I could get Chinese into the pub, I was so excited.
Why don't more pubs do that?
I know, right? It feels like, that should be your big sell.
I've never been that kind of person who orders a takeaway to a pub, though.
Have you not?
Even a pizza or anything.
I didn't have to live it, I wanted to cross the road.
I've never done that.
Why not? I mean, the pub encourages you to do it. I mean, don't bring it to a pub that serves Sunday roast.
No, I know. I don't know, for some reason I feel like I'm out of my comfort zone there. If I'm ordering a takeaway, I kind of want to be at home ordering a takeaway rather than somewhere else.
So are you worried about how it looks?
Sort of stranger danger a bit.
Are you worried about how it looks if you come in with a takeaway then? Do you think...
I wouldn't order a takeaway at a pub if that wasn't pub policy.
Okay.
Mm. I wouldn't do it. It's like, I wouldn't bring my own booze to a pub. It would just feel a bit weird.
Well, that would be. Though London prices may be quite sensible. So,
well, to be fair, I wouldn't eat this at a pub either. Okay. Because it would stink up the place. Yeah, yeah. So.
Andrew, you mentioned Jamie Oliver earlier.
Yes.
Now, Jamie Oliver, obviously, he features in your videos.
Well, he doesn't feature. He doesn't I put him in.
So can you tell me a little bit about, for anyone who doesn't know already, what your character is that you play in the videos, how he started and a bit about that.
And how it grew and grew, basically. Yeah.
It started from me just improvising on the podcast. What if I played this Asian character? I've come out with three characters on the podcast. Only one took off because the others two were a bit insane. One of the characters was a smutty late night radio DJ, but it's just dirty. I just play like the careless whisper, the saxophone part, and then say dirty
sexy
shit
part.
Over it. Yeah.
So does he reflect someone, a type of person you know?
A type of person. Not someone I know, but a combination of a lot, like the Asian uncles you see at a kopitiam, we call it kopitiam, a coffee shop, hawker stall. Loud mouths, arrogant, very kind, but like they talk a lot of shit.
And are they very opinionated on food? Is that a thing that they, okay.
Yeah. They're opinionated on everything, but food is like, they will go to a stall and they would be like, if it's really good, they would be like, oh, I had better in Penang 20 years ago. this is okay, it's child's play. I had better. And I'm like, well, bring me there then, you know?
Wow. And would they be saying that loud enough so the hawker themselves could hear it?
Sometimes, yeah.
So you created a character from the podcast.
Yeah, I was improvising it. I was like, oh, would it be funny if I played this middle-aged Asian guy?
Yeah.
Who, it started out as a real estate agent.
Oh, did
he? Because I just watched like an episode of Staff Let's Flats or something. And I was like, wouldn't it be funny if it's an Asian character showing the flat, and like, this Asian uncle who's like, oh, you know how estate agents are? Like, oh, it's not small, it's cozy, it's cozy. I know there's blood on the wall, but don't worry. I cleaned the blood before you move in. You know? That kind of scammy Asian uncle estate agent type.
Yeah.
But it took off, you know, people love the character.
So when was this? When was this first?
Very, very first thought popped into my head, maybe June last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it was in lockdown.
That recent?
Yeah.
I would have thought genuinely 2017, 2018.
Really?
In my head, he's been around such a long time. God, that's such a huge...
It's become like a...
Why do you think it got so popular so quickly? Because it's appealing to not just Malaysians who can identify with the character. Uh-huh.
I feel I really blew up on YouTube. So I posted a video and then a week later I got 10,000 views. I was like, okay, that's really good, 10,000 views. I was 7,000 subscribers at the time. So 10,000 views more than my subscribers. I was like, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, another week goes by and then Reddit picked it up, Twitter picked it up, Facebook. It went viral on every platform it was shared. And the views just started ticking up.
And what was the video? Was there one video that went viral?
Yeah, the very first one, the BBC Food Egg Fried Rice video. I think it blew up because at the time, I didn't know this at the time, it's my hindsight, my analysis of it. Nobody's done that before. Nobody's done, one, it's a reaction video, it's been done before, but nobody's done a reaction video as a character.
Yes.
And the character itself is also, you know, I'm a comedian, right? So I can know how to write funny things and be funny on camera. And the editing was good, it was quite original, it was shitting on food and... food is quite a relatable topic, and it's rice. Every Asian person everywhere around the world care about it. And the passion was real, even before Uncle Roger. I don't know if you've seen my stand-up, but I have a whole routine on rice, so the passion is real. So nobody's really shit on like chefs online as a reaction video. So it was I found this really original, unique thing by accident, because I wanted to do the Uncle Roger character in my first YouTube video. I was like, oh, what should I do the character in? Then a fan of the podcast sent me the BBC Food Egg Fried Rice one. Shout out to Hersha. She was under an onslaught after the video came out. She was a presenter in that video.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So a fan of mine sent that BBC Food Egg Fried Rice video. I was like, this is perfect for Uncle Roger to review.
Yeah.
And at that point, I've already done reaction videos before as myself. I know how to edit. I know how social media kind of works, you know? So it was, all the ingredients came together in a perfect storm.
That's amazing.
Wow, that's
and then
so
were
cool.
you?
Yeah, thanks.
So did you put so the cool. one up? It then went blew up, and then you started doing more. And so you were editing it yourself and making it yourself to begin with. So it was hugely labor intensive, was it to begin with?
It was. I want to put out a good product, a fun video to watch. You know, so editing is very important.
Okay, yeah.
But now I have an editor helping out. Yeah. I still touch the file, I still edit a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's nice, you need to be able to scale, you know?
It's amazing. Yeah. This is really good. It's absolutely delicious.
It's not so like it's your classic takeaway, right?
But yeah.
No,
but it's much thicker.
I don't go to those.
I always assumed it was sort of closer to a pho, but it's not, is it? No. It's much thicker.
Pho's good too, I wouldn't shit on pho.
Pho is too much like soup for me. I'm going to say, I actually find pho quite a little bit boring sometimes. The broth aspect, the stuff in the middle, I quite enjoy, but then when I'm just left with the broth, really, I can't be bothered. They soak
bones in it for like 18 hours and it's boring.
I know. Ooh, it's more shit.
You better double down. I'm hugely wrong on this.
But it's a textural thing, and I have such a sort of weird relationship with soup. It feels like it plays into the same world. So I'm aware of the great skill and the depth of flavour, and I wouldn't want to criticise people. But it's, yeah, that is a
but some people are just wrong, you know.
But this for me is perfect. It's got...
Sometimes you just have to tell someone your dietary restrictions, get over yourself, you know.
what are things you hate? Are there any foods you hate and will never eat?
Oh.
What being like your food hell?
Certain types of olives.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the really sour ones, the really salty, soury ones.
Yeah. But there's such a depth of flavour in those salty flower olives, you really
That stone's been inside that olive for very long.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Like, when I say I hate them, I would have four, you know, at a meal. You know, because every restaurant makes them differently, and I have had olives I like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just more often than not, I'll still try them, but I end up not liking them. But I still have four or five. There's nothing I won't touch.
On the other side, so you hate olives, but on the other side, do you remember a particular meal? Is there a first meal that really blew you away, or a first meal out you had? As a child, is there a particular meal that you remember really thinking, this is amazing, this is something different?
Yeah. It's a version of this dish, but, you know, it's very common in Malaysia, but I had, like, maybe the best version of it in a place in Malaysia called Penang. It's a state in Malaysia.
Yeah.
The food capital of Malaysia.
Right, yes.
So it was just a truck. They set up, it's a truck, a food truck. They set up some tables and chairs, side of the road.
Yeah.
We sat down, ate, we were just like, whoa. And then we couldn't find the truck ever again. We came back the next day, we didn't know where they were. And I remember my friend, we went with a group of friends, right? And my friend said, I don't even remember what it tasted like, I just remembered it was really good. And that's what, because you were so lost in the moment.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, your brain isn't thinking, okay, what spices are there? Is there cumin in here? Is there turmeric?
Yeah.
You know, your brain's just turned off.
Yeah.
Because you just enjoy it.
I've had certain, the thing for me, like, this is absolutely beautiful. A sign of something that I'm really blown away would be, good food will make me laugh.
Oh, really?
As in, I'll take a bite and I will have an instinctual need to just laugh. I'm like, how is it like that?
Yeah, yeah.
And that, occasionally happens and it just catches me. And I'm just amazed by the capacity and the range of flavour.
Just it's infectious, isn't
yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're, it's just, yeah. What is it? How is this possible? How can you have so much pleasure?
Yeah.
Nigel, I just want to bring us back just quickly to the videos.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You said that people hadn't reacted to chefs before in the way that you have. But have you had any backlash from those chefs?
Maybe not so much backlash, but like, that's being ignored by Jamie Oliver, you know? I've shut up him a few times now. No response from him, you know?
Oh, really?
Gordon would leave a comment.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Gordon left a comment.
He's quite good. His
fried rice video was really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jamie's wasn't.
Okay.
And it's like, come on.
So you really slammed Jamie, did you? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
What were your faults with his rice? What was it?
Well, everything.
Okay. That might be why he's not getting back.
Packet rice in the middle of a recipe video. I'm like, you're a chef, man. You have restaurants. You know what I mean? I have a joke that goes, Jamie Oliver's restaurant, it's called 15 because that's how many people like his food.
So packet rice, that's a no-no, obviously.
No, yeah. And also, I get it, you know, in this climate, a white chef making Asian food, but I'm not even going from that angle.
Yeah.
Uncle Roger's not like this woke character, cultural appropriation, you know? Roger's just like, oh, he fucked up. He fucked up bad, you know? He doesn't care. Uncle Roger's not like a very social justice-y type. He's just, oh, he fucked up. And it's fun. You know?
Yeah. Are there people that you want to do reaction videos of but are too afraid to? Are there any chefs that you thought, oh, I'm not going to go near them?
No, I don't care. literally. We are in different industries, you know. Okay, I will burn that bridge. So that's the best way. I wouldn't do a reaction video to another comedian because I'm in the same industry, but I will burn the bridges of the culinary world, man, because I don't need that bridge. So let's burn it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about egg fried rice then.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. This is the good stuff.
Like getting a takeaway, what do you think constitutes good egg fried rice?
Texture of the rice.
Yeah.
Needs to be, all the grains need to be separated. You need to use aged rice, day old rice, grain separated. Personally, I love it like when it has a color, that, which is why I think a lot of egg fried rice from takeaways here are, like, to me, it's not inedible. Not edible. Really, really bad.
So what would that be? What would be the stuff that makes it really bad? What's the sign?
Not enough flavoring.
Okay, yeah.
You know?
And what kind of flavoring do you need?
Soy sauce.
So basic through the rice before when it turns up, you like to have the flavor through the rice already, soy sauce.
When the sauce hits the rice, when you cook it properly in a wok, you should use the ladle to spray the sauce on the sides of the wok, and the sauce rolls down. So when it touches the sides, it evaporates, it caramelizes, so it just brings up more. It's different from when you just get the rice and pour soy sauce on it.
Yes.
Because mixes with the wok, the sauce mixes with the wok, rolls down to the rice, and then you flip it, toss the rice, and it mixes nicely. And when you toss the rice is up in the air. On a proper fire-burning wok, the fire licks it a little bit. Yeah. So you get a bit of that charred smell, but not burned. It's slightly charred. Certain individual grains of rice are slightly charred. You get that smoky, nice flavor.
And because most people, we've noticed this a lot, people love certain takeaway foods, but they'll never cook them themselves. So I don't know many households that would cook egg fried rice. They have all the ingredients for it.
Yeah.
They never just do it. Would you encourage people just to go out and do it rather than like, or do you think don't ruin it or it's going to end up being like Jamie Oliver?
Well, I always encourage people to eat at restaurants. Just stop cooking. Cooking is hard. Stop cooking. It's not supposed to be easy. Like, but you know, in the UK, I realize there's a huge book writing culture here, which is nice because I love reading. But you know, I read fiction and stuff. But every comedian has books now, which is fine. I guess it's part of your culture. Books are good. But then, because chefs have to come up with books, they have to appeal to the masses.
Okay.
And the masses have like 5 utensils in the kitchen, so they have to make it easy. So I'm like, my advice is stop cooking. If everybody just started eating at restaurants more, restaurant prices would just go lower. There'll be like casual restaurants, noodles for like $7, $6. The quality will go up because there's more competition. There's more money in the restaurant industry to be made. Better people will start opening restaurants here. So I think stop cooking is my advice.
I love that advice.
Like, what are you going to make? Ramen? Broth is going to take 12 hours.
No one is making ramen at home.
What do you make at home, then?
I've had a situation where I'm going to meet friends, assuming we're going out for a meal, and we've got to their house, and they've gone, oh, no, we're going to cook.
Oh, that's
and
the worst.
The absolute heartbreak of knowing you're going to have a homemade lasagna when you thought you were going to go out.
Hold on, but you've gone around to someone's house, and they've said, no, we're cooking together. We're going to cook.
Let me say it here first. Stop surprising me with your home-cooked meals, okay? Like, if we're eating out and then going to yours for drinks.
If you have to cook, freeze it and have it yourself tomorrow. I don't want your spag bol.
Don't surprise me. Tell me beforehand so I can eat before I go. And be like, sorry, I'm full. You know?
Cancel.
Warn me so I can do something better in a restaurant with someone else.
And then people say like, oh, it's very expensive to eat out. I'm like, well, you're at the pub all the time. A round is £40.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. 30 pounds, 40 pounds for a round. Don't do rounds. Go to a restaurant.
And often cooking a specific meal at home where you're getting a variety of ingredients does the price. I'm always surprised by, cost much more than I thought it would have.
Of course, if you want to do it right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Even for Western meals, it's tough too, you know. It's not just Asian food. I don't really know. Even a good pasta. Okay, like pasta, you think it takes 12 minutes to cook. Sure, that's correct. But if you want to say, I want to make a carbonara, where are you going to get guanciale?
Guanciale, pepper, and then pecorino.
Good pump, pecorino, exactly.
Pecorino, and then...
Good pecorino.
Good pecorino. Good
pepper.
That is it. But most people...
Two eggs as well. They cost money.
Two eggs.
Two eggs, you need that, yeah.
Well, actually, we...
Carbonara is one of my go-to things.
We get them for free.
Yeah.
Exactly. We don't need to buy the eggs anymore. Carbonara is back in the game.
But that's true, though, because, Nigel, quite a lot of your stuff is about people doing things incorrectly.
Yeah.
Right. So whether, you know, most people would have carbonara where they'd put their cream in and they'd put cheeses bacon. And bacon yeah. and parsley, and that's all wrong. That's yeah. not the way to do it. Is there, have you noticed anything, other things that people like your friends do or stuff that people do that is completely wrong way of cooking stuff? And do you like want to interrupt and tell them this is the wrong way? Or do you hold back?
Yeah, well, we're not friends anymore, usually, so I don't have to tell them. But to be honest, people are intimidated to invite me to have their home-cooked meals.
Really?
Which I think they should. I think it's good. So we end up going to restaurants
You bring
more.
A two-camera setup as well, don't you?
I'm preparing them an orange polo and sitting there waiting for their meal to be served.
Do you ever step into Uncle Roger when you're...
I critique stuff without an accent, but the critiques are the same as what Uncle Roger would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So have you been quite brutal with friends before when you've eaten or they've cooked for you?
I saved them a bit of face. I'm not that brutal.
How generous.
I'll do that, you know that British person thing when someone microwaves fish at the office? You know, you just do that smile and, oh, okay.
Broader than friends then, are you the sort of person that would complain in a restaurant? Are you that sort of, but would you ever say anything if something was wrong with a meal, or are you kind of, is it mainly?
I've actually only character? Done that once.
What was the situation?
An Indian restaurant, and then the meat was dry. And then my friend, the friend I was with, she works at Goldman Sachs, so it's like nothing to her. So I was like, hey, complain about it, man. And then she just complained for me. I was like, okay, yeah, let's send this back. But I usually don't do it. Yeah. I just remember it and then never return to the restaurant.
I've only complained once at a restaurant, and it was the most expensive meal I've ever had. My girlfriend and I went to a Michelin-starred restaurant.
Which one?
Salt Bay.
I'm not going to say where it was. But
Redneck Bridge.
There was a hair, a long hair, not of either our hair colours, through the food.
Wow.
And we thought, oh, should we complain? Basically, us debating whether to complain ruined the meal, because it was like three courses of
it's
us going,
I should
say
restaurant.
Something, I don't say
it's
that, yeah, whatever.
With did
in the
hair
end,
in
did,
it.
Did say something, and they then said, well, it must be yours. It kicked up a fuss, and we were like, no, it isn't. It's not even our hair colour. Anyway, the result was, we still had to pay for the meal, but they said, we'll put a bottle of champagne for you next time you come.
Yeah,
but obviously, well, we're not going to go back now.
Yeah.
And also, it was so expensive, we can't afford to go back. But so there's a bottle of champagne on ice and has been there for about 4 years in central London. So do you cook then at all, or you don't?
No, the kitchen's not ready. But
okay.
When I live by myself in my old place, yeah, I cook sometimes.
Okay.
Simple things.
Yeah.
Is that because you think spending ages cooking isn't really worth it, in that because life's busy, or is it kind of... So what sort of things would you be cooking?
It's impossible. Like if I make stuff, it would just be pasta. It's simple.
Okay.
You know? Or I do meal kits sometimes. I know a guy who runs a ramen joint in Wales. They do meal kits, so everything comes prepackaged.
That's a long way to get the meal kit, though, from, isn't it? Yeah. You're waiting a long time. I don't know what time you put that order in.
So good, though.
Like, what's it called?
Matsudai ramen. I filmed the video with him.
Oh, did you?
You know, the ramen broth, when it comes, it's solid. That's how thick, that's how much fat is in it.
Wow.
And you're not going to be able to make that.
No.
And then what do you do with it? Do we just heat that through?
You heat it up and then it turns into a liquid.
Yeah, most.
And then you cook the noodles for like 45 seconds.
Amazing.
And eggs marinate it, you just slice them open.
Where is for you the best like Malaysian food? In London, because we're in London, but outside of London as well, if you know any.
In London, my personal favourite is Laksamania, central London near Oxford Street.
Okay. Laksamania, never been there.
And what about when you're travelling around the country gigging? Are there other places you've tried or places not really?
No, I just go to Pizza Express, man.
Do you really?
Really?
I mean, when you're in like I was in Northampton last week. I'm not going to spend time like searching for a Malaysian restaurant I have a gig to do. My brain's I'm working. I can't really enjoy it anyway.
Yeah.
So just go to the venue and get a Deliveroo, an Honest Burger or something.
What about, we have some food here. This food is amazing. Have you had any takeaway disasters then? Has it ever gone wrong for you? Is there a meal in your memory where it's just been...
Maybe not disasters, it's just like the food was shit, you know? Does that count as a disaster?
Yeah, I think it counts.
But when you get a takeaway, you expect it to be like, eh, you know?
Yeah.
In Dublin, I got a Chinese takeaway there, and it's like, they serve Chinese food, Thai food, Malaysian food, Vietnamese food, everything under the same umbrella. I was like, oh, it's not going to be good, but I'm hungry, so let's just get... what they call a spice bag. So it's just a bag and there's chicken in it, chips.
Right.
And you can even get some curry sauce next to it. Oh my God, yeah.
They do worry me, those places where they do every type of food on the sun. There was one near me where I used to live in Hoxton, which did Italian, Chinese and Indian. But wow. How is that possible? No doubt they were all terrible.
Yeah.
Like a laminated board, which is sort of like the departures board at Heathrow. It had like so many dishes on it. There's no way you could work. It was really confusing. You'd have to put aside like 4 days to work out what you wanted, and you knew it was going to be crap.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What, I mean, Chinese takeaway menus are also way too long. You know, and then they have a small section for British food. You know, like who's ordering
the fish and chips?
Omelette or fish and chips from there. Yeah. And then the menu is like pages on pages. You have to open it like an accordion, you know?
Yeah. That is true, right? Most people, they're opening up a menu and they see 60 dishes on the menu, especially with Chinese food or Malaysian food. What would you say, just go for this?
The thing is, at a typical Chinese takeaway, that long-ass menu, you really can't win. There's nothing good on there. And again, people are going to yell at me for like, why are you shitting on Chinese takeaways? They're your people. I'm like, well, it's kind of outdated now, you know? I honestly think the British palate has improved.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they came here in the 70s, 80s, the British palate was shit, right? We can all admit that, right?
Yeah.
But I think, okay, I live in London, so maybe I'm biased, and things have evolved a little bit now. You have Korean joints, specific regions of China, contemporary Chinese joints, where they only serve like Xinjiang food, you know, or other regions of China. And people have moved on. So I think the takeaways, thank you for your service, but it's time to shut them down. Your kids don't want to take over them anyway. And takeaway parents will never let their kids work in the takeaway because they want them to have a better life. It's a hard life. You should want the takeaways to close down because you want your parents to retire, right? If your parents want a takeaway, you want them to retire.
Yeah,
you want
the
next generation of chefs, of contemporary Asian chefs to come up and do their own thing, like Sambal Shok, like Laksamania. Yeah.
A Wong,
yes, it's very
so do you,
high-end.
Do you think we will see a lot of these traditional, which I mean to British palate, Chinese takeaways closing down?
Yes.
I think that there will be a shift from that.
It already is happening.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah. And sure, I get the nostalgia. Sure, take a photo, you know? Take a photo, remember it. It's a good thing. It's pushing Asian food forward in the UK.
You'd struggle to find a dish that would work for you from a traditional Chinese takeaway, would you then?
What
would you go for? What would be the thing that you go, okay, at least I'm not going to be...
I would go for their special fried rice because it's like, okay, you think it's special. Maybe you are really good at this one dish. I'll give you a chance to impress me.
But that is really interesting that if you see the decline of Chinese traditional... Well, we say traditional Chinese takeaways, we basically mean the Chinese speakers you might see on the high street.
Yeah, the greasy, sugary, sweet and sour pork, all that stuff,
which has been around unchanged for a very long time.
Yeah.
But there's still an appetite for Chinese food.
Yeah. It's evolved, though.
Yeah. So that sort of want for regional stuff, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But that's maybe where you can see a shift there.
Here, I deliver or I drive there sometimes. Next, close to this place is a place that specializes in Xi'an cuisine, which is a region, place in China.
Okay.
And it's really good.
Yeah, is it Hunanese? Is that right?
Hunan is a different place. But
yes, there's a really popular one just around the corner from me where I live in Clapton, which is great as well.
Yeah.
And that does really well.
I also think it leads to the perception that Asian food should be cheap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because all Chinese takeaways, they go by volume, so they go very cheap. They try to make it up with volume, right? So I think it's a good thing that takeaways are closing. That means people's palates are improving and... chefs can have more leeway. Yeah. Like a Chinese chef doesn't have to open a takeaway now. They can open like kiln, you know? Like a type of restaurant.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, kiln is amazing.
I said takeaways because it's not great for our podcast, but I think... Yeah.
Also, this is embarrassing to admit. Part of my... I immediately had a voice where, will I still be able to get crispy shredded beef? and I thought, I can't ask that. That sounds terrible. What's your view on, this is one of my favourite takeaway tweets.
Uh-huh.
Szechuan, crispy shredded beef. It's not really Szechuan, let's be honest. But
I never had it.
I think from your descriptions, if you're not looking for sort of sickly sweet gluten stuff, it's probably not for you.
Yeah.
I think I've basically got a three-year window in which I can get this in now.
But I totally see that. You know, Indian food has been elevated.
Yeah.
And, you know, lots of restaurants, whether it's Dishoom or others, have done a really, really good job.
Uh-huh.
But it does feel like Chinese takeaways are still slightly stuck in that 90s, 80s sort of past.
Although dim sum and things like this, there seems to be a sort of growth and interest in that. That's doing quite well.
Korean food, you know, Squid Game with K-pop, people like that more, you know?
Yeah. Actually, Korean fried chicken is becoming more of a thing.
Yeah.
But there aren't that many Chinese or Malay chefs around, are there, like, who are popular?
Malaysian chefs? I know Singaporean chefs.
Would you shit on them?
If they fuck up, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. But, They tend to do Asian dishes. Yeah. Right, you know, so yeah. I compliment them in my videos. Yeah.
I've realised we've missed out one dish actually.
Curry puffs.
Curry puffs, which look like tiny Cornish pasties.
Yes. Again, most cultures have something like this.
Oh, really? You
know? Okay,
so
we try.
So the pasty, I know the pasty was designed as a way that you were supposed to hold on to the... Was it initially a mining thing, wasn't it? I think. That I people working down the Cornish mines would use this...
You're talking to people who are not going to know.
This
Cornish ore miners.
This knotted little bit round here would be used... You would hold that as a way of keeping your coal-covered hands away from the bit that you ate. So this was basically sort of a handle that would then often be discarded because it would be filthy. So this is where this sort of... This obviously, I'm sure this has a different history to it, but that was the idea of the pasty.
That's great.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe it's British influence. We were colonised, you know? So maybe we stole some British food ideas.
Okay, let's give this a go then.
Shocking.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, that is good. This is a curry puff. Is this a thing that you can get in Malaysia? Is this? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Very common.
It's so much like a little pasty.
It is. It is. It's a Malaysian pasty.
Absolutely delicious.
Also, I'm going to add, like, crispy shredded beef. Sure, if your takeaway is closed down, you might miss that. But you might find something even better to replace it.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know?
And takeaways could evolve to become like this. Mm. You wouldn't classify this as a typical takeaway, right?
Of course, but yeah.
Maybe in the future, this would be, you know, considered a takeaway. That'd be nice.
Mm. What are your plans coming up then? So are there plans for Uncle Roger or what are you up to?
Everything, really. I keep doing the YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. I'm starting a new podcast soon and I'm going on a world tour as well.
A world tour?
Yeah, yeah.
Where will that be taking in? Where are you going?
Everywhere. New York, LA, Helsinki, Tokyo.
Oh, wow.
Kuala Lumpur. When I got the list, it was a little bit daunting. I'm like, Tokyo and Helsinki, they laugh at the same thing. You know what they laugh at? You know? Every continent except Africa and South America.
Have you gigged abroad before?
Yes, yes.
And how did you find it?
It's tricky. It's tricky. You take a cut in funniness. Mm. Your British references, some of them don't work. So when I gig in Europe, maybe I'm like 10% less funny. But culturally, it's still similar, right? But when I gig in Asia, surprisingly, I'm like... maybe 30% cut in funniness because, you know, I've only done comedy in the West. You know, in Malaysia, the sense of humor is different, the references don't work, and the sense of humor diverges a little bit as well. I'm hoping to get better at that.
The one thing I could say from gigging abroad, the one gain you do get is that any observations you make about things that they do that to you feel surprising, let's say... type of toilet or what it happens to be or the way buses work in Norway or whatever. I remember you just mentioned these things and that is one thing because it's that outsider sort of, it really takes off, I find, sometimes.
But, you know...
But then I go to my normal material and then it dies itself. They love the toilet stuff for 3 minutes and then they do my stuff about my childhood and they're sort of like, what the hell is this?
I agree. But it's like something I need to get better at then. So when I write material, I have to make sure that it's universally accessible. You know, instead of writing complaining about, I don't know, Wagamamas.
Yeah.
I talk about my life that's more universal, you know?
Well, that's interesting because most people, I think, who are listening to this and will know you, will know you from the videos as a character comedian. Mm-hmm. So your live show, are you in character or you're not in character? So it's sort of getting to know you as a person rather than you as Uncle Roger, or do you sort of mix between the...
Uncle Roger opens the show.
Okay.
Then support act, break, then me.
Yeah, oh, wow. Okay, wow.
That's how I do it.
Is the reason you start with Uncle Roger because you worry people will turn up and expect him from the off? Is there a thought process there as to why you've arranged it in that way?
The thought process was I want people to leave seeing me as a last thing.
Okay, yeah.
So to know I'm a comedian in my own right, and Uncle Roger to start also makes them happy. They're like, oh, you know, I know this guy, you know. So it keeps them happy in the beginning. And fortunately for me, nobody left during the break because you would think, oh, they're only here for Uncle Roger. Uncle Roger's done. They just go home.
Yeah.
But everybody stayed. I've done 3 tour shows so far. They all stayed to watch me do stand up. So really appreciate
it. That's really exciting. And what's your new podcast you're starting?
We haven't announced it yet, but it's going to be... the same title as my tour. It's called Haiya with Nigel Ng.
Okay, you know?
So I think it's going to be launched in tandem with the world tour. So a little bit of behind the scenes, you know. Like I think when people go see a tour show, you know, say I go to Stockholm, right? And then you want to, oh, what does Nigel think of Stockholm? You know, so the podcast would be a way of like documenting my travels on the tour.
Great.
Shitting on whatever city I'm in. And then Haya conveys disappointment,
right?
Scratching
off, you can't return there again. Yeah.
Burn that bridge,
coming closer and closer.
And I want my listeners to call in and describe something that disappointing that happened to them in the past week, you know? So
that's really fun.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. We stopped doing. I used to have another podcast called Rise to Meet You.
But
Evan was fantastic, super fun.
But we had to stop doing that because scheduling became really difficult. And given how I'm traveling next year, time zone differences, impossible.
Do you enjoy traveling and being on the road? Then is how do you feel about the idea of being away for that?
I was thinking about this. I think given my audience is very city based.
Okay.
You know, so I think I'll enjoy this kind of traveling more than say the UK. Circuit traveling, you know, you go to Shoreham, Warrington, you know, and nice cities, sure.
Yeah.
But the average British town, no matter how nice it is, you've seen them all.
Yeah.
You know, a nice high street, that kind of thing. But because my audiences are very city based, so I'll be in Toronto, Vancouver, LA, New York,
so
San Fran.
Yeah.
Sure, visa stuff is a nightmare and it costs too much money. I spend too much money on visas. I like cities, you know. Mm. I like going on city breaks anyway, so.
But that's such an exciting aspect of gaining a following on YouTube that it allows you to sell abroad in a way that a lot of big name acts here who are big on television probably couldn't do that because the audience will be very British centric.
Yeah.
So it's great that it allows you to have that fan base entirely around the world.
Do you know how many of your followers are UK based?
Like, if it was 15%.
Okay, do you do? Yeah. Yes, you do, 50%.
Around five, yeah.
Around that.
Yeah. So what are you going to do with that answer?
I was just interested to know if you know the breakdown of like, is the most of families in the US or is it like, and is that how the tour is then?
Very equally spread. 25% US, 15% UK, 15%, 10% Malaysia, then long tail, Singapore, Australia, Canada, New Zealand. Yeah.
So before we sort of review the meal, because at the end review the meal, would you have any advice to someone who is starting a YouTube or starting sort of a character sort of thing?
Or a food podcast?
Did it feel like retrospectively, do you look back and go, I've learned this? Or did it feel like there was a certain randomness? How do you feel about it?
Definitely is a randomness to it. Who gets big, what goes viral. But there are people who go viral with one video and then nothing happens after that. But they're also the people who can capitalize on that virality. So I'm fortunate to be the latter. I capitalized on the virality because I had all the YouTube skills ready to go.
Interesting.
So, you know, I would say if you're starting a YouTube channel, get your chops down, get good at YouTube. You're not guaranteed success, but when the opportunity comes, you're ready to take advantage of it.
Yeah. That's really interesting because people can go viral accidentally by being the subject of something.
Yeah.
So they didn't create something themselves, but they were in a video that went viral.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying because you've got all those skills, editing you control it, and then you were able to distribute it all yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of you had like a killer instinct there.
Yeah, it's very fortunate. But with every video you put out, it's like playing a lottery, right? Every video you put out is a ticket.
Mm,
so the more videos you put out, the chances of you actually hitting it will increase your chances.
Nigel, how do we get to 1 million followers?
That's really hard, man. You've got to find a niche, I guess.
Yeah. We've got a niche. Yeah. This is it, isn't
food.
It?
The problem is we're complimenting food. We need to be snagging it off.
We need to have a video component to the podcast. The start is YouTube, right?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
There's a few hurdles. Right, so let's review what we've had here. I thought that was absolutely delicious. I was slightly aware of not wanting to slurp too much throughout, so I've still got quite a lot to finish, so I will.
So but it
was
amazing. Because I've got very little, does that mean that I slurped quite a lot?
I imagine you slurped throughout, yeah.
You gave some to Emma, didn't you?
I did, yes, that's true, yes.
So let's go through. So first of all, we had the crackers, which were delicious. I really, really like those. They were kind of a sort of poppadom with a fenugreek flavour. It was really lovely. Fried chicken was amazing.
Yeah.
I really like the peanut sauce. I like the fact that, I don't know if this is true of Malaysian sort of satay, but it has a real sort of half chopped up. The peanuts are very clear in it. It's not too smooth.
It's a lovely texture. It's a nice texture.
It's chunky. It's great.
I like it, yeah.
And what is galangal, is my question. Because I've seen it a lot as like a key ingredient. I know Gordon Ramsay used it in one of his videos and you were like, oh, you're using galangal. That means you know what you're doing. What is that? And is that in this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Same family as ginger. Just tastes a little darker, a little spicier. It's what we use in Southeast Asia, really.
Right, okay.
And ginger is more of a, if you use it, it's more of an East Asian thing, Chinese maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But galangal is a Southeast Asian, slightly different variety of that.
Well, it's an absolutely beautiful dish. I really like the heat.
Yeah, I love it. This is great. It's
gorgeous. And then the little sort of tiny patties at the end.
Curry puffs. Mm-hmm.
What a great meal. So for listeners, the name of this place again is?
Sambal Shop. Sambal. S-H-I-O-K, Holloway Road.
Holloway Road, and there is a pub opposite where you can have a drink and leave and bring in food. I mean, what more do you need? Exactly. Yeah. Nigel, that was a joy. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you very much, Nigel. Really, really loved it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Great.
Thanks for coming.
So that was the brilliant Nigel Ung there. He's going to be going on a world tour over the next year or so. So go to his website, find out where he's going, and, you know, go somewhere close. Don't sort of travel to Tokyo if you live in Ealing, but do go and see him. He's fantastic. And also, if you've enjoyed the show in general, leave us a review, spread the word, subscribe and like. But the reviews really make such a difference. So if you do that, that would be fantastic. And we will love you forever because we have wonderful people coming up, don't we, Sim? Forever and ever and ever.
Exactly. Forever and ever.
Eternity. Even when I close my eyes for the last time, I think, do you know who really mattered to me? who have we got coming up next week, Sim?
Next week, we have the wonderful Rosie Jones. Rosie Jones is a comedian. She's an actress. She's appeared on shows like The Last Leg, Ten Cats' Countdown, QI, Hypothetical, and she's done a lot of Channel 4's Paralympics coverage. She's a friend and a really, really great company and very enthusiastic about takeaways. So
she is,
ideal,
yeah.
I think, for us.
What's quite exciting, Sim, by the way, I don't know if you know this, we're going to her new house and she's already WhatsApped me to say, by the way, I haven't got any chairs, so we'll see what happens there.
So we bring our own chairs.
We'll
bring our own chairs. No problem.
We're kind like that. So join us next week where we'll be sat cross-legged on Rosie's floor. See you next week.
Bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow-up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code GLOW.